today on Annenberg Radio News.
It's not specific. It's not a media conference. It's not something about technology or art or science. It's about great ideas, no matter where they come from.
Hear from some of the guests that drew a crowd for an innovative event at USC. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 12th, 2011. I'm Sarah Erickson. The Los Angeles City Ethics Commission today fined Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and four city council members for violating city law on accepting gifts. Britt Thorson has more.
The five commissioners were unanimous in voting to fine the mayor almost $21,000. They also fined city council officials Eric Garcetti, Jose Huizar, Herb Wesson, and Tony Cardenas a combined $13,300. Heather Holt is the executive director of the CEC.
These penalties were basing on the excess amount of the gifts beyond the initial $100. So the total fine is a little over $20,000, and that's in addition to the $21,000 fine that the FPPC has already ratified.
The FPPC is the California Fair Political Practices Commission. Yesterday, it fined the mayor $21,000 for failing to report 21 gifts over the last 4 years. He's avoiding the maximum $160,000 fine because his failure to report these gifts was unintentional. Among them were Lakers, Dodgers, and USC game tickets, award shows and after parties, and concerts.
These are the events that both parties agreed should have been reported, and therefore these were the events that were the subject of the FPPC's enforcement action.
The mayor accepted these gifts from restricted sources, which essentially means anyone with active business before the city.
We have 12 counts of gifts from restricted sources, and we have a chart that outlines it, it going back from 2007 through March of 2010.
These sources include the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, AEG, BET Networks, and the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. These companies are also facing fines from the CEC.
It's not just our elected offices. It is all 6,000 of our city officials who are subject to the restricted source law. So everyone in every department who is required to file a Form 700 needs to be aware of these laws.
The combined penalties value almost $42,000. The mayor is working jointly with the FPPC and CEC to fully resolve the investigation and provide a comprehensive settlement. The mayor said earlier this month, "It is my responsibility to make sure I act in strict compliance with the applicable rule." Britt Thorson, Annenberg Radio News.
Governor Jerry Brown has set an ambitious renewable energy goal for California. Today, he signed legislation requiring power companies to draw at least a third of their energy from renewable sources by the year 2020. Julia Dang reports.
This bill marks the most aggressive alternative energy mandate the nation has ever seen. Within just 10 years, Brown expects to ease dependence on traditional coal and natural gas. Governor Brown says that a gradual shift away from our dependence on fossil fuels would make California's energy policy more sustainable.
Instead of just taking oil from thousands of miles away, we're taking the sun and converting it. So this is really the great opportunity and the great challenge.
Critics argue that California's plan will drive up electricity costs for consumers, hiking the rates by more than 7%. California currently generates a little under 20% of its power from renewable sources. This includes solar panels, windmills, landfill gases, and hydroelectric plants. And Governor Brown believes this is the only way for California to move forward.
There are people who deny science, who say evolution doesn't happen, who say there's no such thing as climate change, who think we can drill our way to happiness and self-sufficiency. It's not true.
Alternative energy businesses also like Brown's support. Thomas Warner, the CEO of SunPower, says increasing the use of renewable energy will create sustainable American jobs for the long haul.
California has a solar policy that gives us long-term market visibility. That allows companies like us to invest.
The U.S. Energy Secretary was just at SunPower Corporation. He offered $1.2 billion in loan guarantees for the state's Valley Solar Ranch. The project at the ranch should create 350 construction jobs and power 60,000 homes. He also gave a loan to another company to start a solar plant in the Mojave Desert. Stephanie Guzman, Annenberg Radio News.
That was Stephanie Guzman for Julia Dang. The Los Angeles Unified School District proposed a new budget today to try and close the $408 million deficit. The plan won't lay off teachers, but it will require them to take 12 furlough days. It'll also borrow money from various accounts to save magnet schools and other programs. But the deputy superintendent says this is only a temporary fix. The district will only be in worse shape the following year with an estimated $700 million deficit. It was a long construction process for La Plaza di Cultura y Artes, but its doors are finally about to open. Today, the media got a sneak preview of the Mexican-American Cultural Center. Tanner Keith tells us what we can see when it opens on Saturday.
La Plaza de Cultura y Artes is located in the exact spot where Los Angeles was founded in 1781.
I think that they will gain a sense of identity, an understanding of other people's identity. I think they will also identify whether they're Mexican American or not with the trials and tribulations of migrants and what that brings with everyone who comes to this country having to suffer sometimes injustice and sometimes having success and always in the pursuit of freedom and happiness.
The newly renovated five-story building is now filled with interactive experiences for visitors to explore the lives of the people who make up the city's history.
One of the important things here is that we do not collect objects, we really collect stories. And stories are forever.
La Plaza represents the nation's premier center of Mexican-American culture. Miguel Ángel Corzo, the president and CEO of La Plaza de Culturas y Artes, believes the people from all backgrounds will be able to enjoy it.
We are working with all of the parties to find a solution that will satisfy everyone and also to take advantage of educating our visitors about the historic site and the importance of Los Angeles that lies underground so much.
The inaugural exhibit, LA Starts Here, examines the founding of Los Angeles through the eyes of Mexican Americans who first settled here. Corzo says it's more than just an exhibit of artifacts. In early January, construction for La Plaza was put on hold when workers dug up several dozen bodies dating back to the 1800s. It turns out that the site was formerly a cemetery where more than 450 American Indians were buried. Corzo is working with Native American groups to preserve and reinter the human remains. La Plaza might have been a dream to Corzo 17 years ago, but the public can experience it on Saturday for free. Tanner Keith, Annenberg Radio News.
You can expect moderate temperatures this week and a few clouds. Tonight will be mostly clear with temperatures in the upper 40s to mid 50s. Tomorrow, cloudy in the morning, partial clouds by afternoon with highs in the 60s. Thursday will be sunny and slightly breezy with highs around the low 70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we talk with an educator at West Point about Civil War battle that began today, just 150 years ago. Compton Community College lost its accreditation 6 years ago after a series of financial and administrative problems. Now an education center of El Camino College, the school is working to regain it. For more on the story, we sent Mark Shore to the El Camino College Compton Center.
Compton has a reputation for gangs and violence. In the heart of the city is a school that could be in any other town. As you walk through campus, you see tall trees, lush fields, and fancy new buildings. What you might not see, however, is a sense of Compton pride. Compton Community College was taken over by Torrance-based El Camino College 5 years ago.
It's not as customer-friendly as it used to be. Just speaking with some of the students that I work with, they feel like the identity of Compton is trying to be removed.
Gregory Johnson has been taking classes at Compton over the last 20 years. The main goal of the school's partnership with El Camino is to help bring Compton into good standing with the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges. El Camino courses are currently being taught at Compton Center by Compton faculty. New students like Latia Samuel are just glad for the opportunity to go to school.
It did turn a lot of people off, but for the most of it, we still get new students every day. So, you know, to each his own.
The community relations director for El Camino College did not return multiple requests for comment. The Compton Community College Board of Trustees will discuss concerns about the accreditation process at its meeting tonight. Mark Shore, Annenberg Radio News.
More than 1,000 researchers and students packed USC's Bovard Auditorium today for the university's annual TED by USC event, which stands for Technology Entertainment Design. Whitney Blaine spoke with speakers and attendees who have been anticipating this day.
The tickets went like hotcakes. If there was a rock concert for intellectuals, TED by USC would be it. In fact, they opened the conference in song.
Brings everything together. It brings technology, art, future, present, and innovation, and a different way to look at things.
And how are you enjoying it so far?
I love it.
That was Patricia Cardoso, an adjunct professor at USC School of Cinematic Arts. She said she couldn't wait to attend the event. Neither could the 1,200 other attendees who got on the list just before it sold out.
Because it's fun, and because ultimately, learning is exciting. And this is a place for people who are excited to learn. So we all grow something. We all grow a bit while we're here.
That was host Derek Ashong, who spoke to me in a whisper during a brief break between the packed agenda that included nearly 20 speakers, 7 films, and 6 live performances over 5 hours, all revolving around the theme, Actions Speak Louder. One speaker was Jose Antonio Rosa, who teaches at the University of Wyoming. He says the event has become a catalyst of innovation for USC.
The greatness of this university, in fact, most of it has come from accidents. If you stop and look at the research and things, it's like, ooh, we didn't expect that, but it happened. Let's study it further, and lo and behold, great findings in science, in social science, in the humanities have emerged. This university has a long history of that.
For those that couldn't attend the event, all lectures will be posted on the TED website at www.ted.com. Whitney Blaine, Annenberg Radio News.
Today marks the 150-year anniversary of the first shots of the American Civil War. To honor the anniversary, the U.S. Postal Service released 2 new stamps depicting images of the siege on Fort Sumter and the First Battle of Bull Run. The stamps are designated as forever stamps. Consumers can purchase them now for 44 cents, and they will always be usable regardless of future increases in stamp prices. The Postal Service will continue to release stamps commemorating important battles of the 5-year Civil War throughout 2015. Postage stamps aren't the only way that Americans will be recalling the U.S. Civil War over the next few years. Hollywood directors like Steven Spielberg and Robert Redford have already planned documentaries and dramatic reenactments of Civil War-era stories. Major Joseph Scott is a history instructor at the United States Military Academy at West Point. He spoke with me earlier today about the significance of the opening battle of the Civil War at Fort Sumter and how Americans can commemorate the anniversary of the war without celebrating it. Can you describe for me the significance of these battles and their relation to the Civil War overall?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Fort Sumter was sort of the culmination of a crisis that had been building, I mean, based on who you ask, either since the Declaration of Independence or since, more specifically, Abraham Lincoln's election as a Republican president, with no votes down south because of the stated policies of the Republican Party, which was to restrict the slavery to the current states where it was in rather than expanding out west. President Lincoln's election sparked the secession of South Carolina first and then a succession of other deep south states. At the time, though, there had been no shots fired. Basically, it was a political crisis, but not yet a military crisis. And the decision by the Southern government to fire upon Fort Sumter, which was currently occupied by Union forces on South Carolina territory, was the first overt act of military violence against the Union government, which sparked President Lincoln's call for basically an army to put down this rebellion. At that point, the had moved from a political crisis to a military crisis because shots had been fired at Fort Sumter.
Some of the talk has been about how to commemorate the war without celebrating it.
Right.
Why is it important to commemorate the memory of the U.S. Civil War with something like a postage stamp?
It's been a tradition for a long time to use stamps because they're really they're artwork pieces, and they can display, like anything else, sort of the character of it in maybe a neutral setting. It can show the violence, it can show the destructiveness, but it can also sort of honor it in a sense of reminding us what went on. Stamps are both, I guess it's interesting, they're both artwork and coinage, essentially, because they have monetary value and everything else, so they're going to be seen a lot. But really, yeah, the balance is, of course, very important between celebrating and commemorating. And I think they're using older artwork. I'm seeing them now. These are actually older images from the time, as a matter of fact, which is a very interesting choice. The Currier and Ives era engravings, more so than anything else, which was what they chose to depict at the time of the actual event or shortly thereafter.
So what do you make of the stamps? Do you think that they've done a good job in choosing images to depict these important battles in American history?
I think they have. I mean, I think part of the issue is it'll prompt discussion amongst the folks who don't know it very well. I mean, the Sumter image just shows a fort on an island on fire and with the dates. And explaining what that it means is important. And why is this fort on fire? What does it mean? And why? How does that lead to a massive cataclysm that killed 600,000 people is important. And I think it sparks discussion, which is really what we historians like to hear, you know, people discussing this stuff.
Hollywood plans on releasing documentaries and dramatic reenactments of Civil War era stories in the coming years, as well as the U.S. Postal Service, which also plans on releasing more stamps. What are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, again, I just hope that people will embrace these stories and learn about them, because as I said earlier, it's very important. It defines the nation, of how our nation is today, and it shaped our society, and understanding what it's about and engaging in discussion about that too, because there is still some contention about what it was about. In if you ask certain people in various parts of the country, they'll say the war was about different things, and that sort of discussion is healthy to work those issues out and assess what it really meant and what it meant for our country. So the more discussion there is, I believe, the better.
Major Joseph Scott is an instructor at West Point. Now we check in with David McAlpine to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Hi. Well, we've got continuing coverage of NASA's announcement to give the Endeavor to the California Space Center. We'll be coming live at with the latest. We also have coverage on how LA residents are celebrating two major space anniversaries today, the first manned flight in space and the first space shuttle flight 30 years ago. And looking at the heightened level of the crisis in Japan, we traveled to the San Onofre nuclear plant to see how Southern California is prepared for a meltdown.
Great. Thanks, David. We'll look forward to that.
Thank you.
And for those who care about the well-being of L.A., the mayor will be giving his State of the City speech tomorrow evening. You can catch it live on Channel 35 at 5 p.m. or catch a live web stream of it on KPCC's website, kpcc.org. That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Julia Dang and Carl Nickenig. Chris Foy is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Sarah Erickson.